So, good morning, everyone. I'm Stephen Taylor, as Stuart said. I am the father of Lydia, wherever she is. I was going to be distracted by her to see the level of distraction that the speaker normally gets. I'm husband to the saintly Elizabeth, who has to deal with tantrums and food all over the floor, and the same from Lydia as well. And I am the son of William and Pauline back up in St. Helens in Merseyside, so I'm a Scouser by origin. The reason I mention back home, it's about 16 years ago when I was living back home, I made a big decision in my life to become a Christian, a really big foundational moment in my life, using a Gideon Bible, a red Gideon Bible. I know Steve's not here, but kind of Gideon's been very important to me, praying that little prayer at the back of my book, and realizing really that I could trust Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And the really significant moment for that, well, it was a doubly significant moment, is that this year I'm 32. So actually I've had 16 years of my pre-Christ life and 16 years as a Christian. So it's really wonderful to have this chance to reflect a little bit on the significance of one psalm in my own journey. And I'm sure many of you who've maybe reached that pivot moment, that tipping point, will look back at that time fondly and you'll see how far you've come on in your Christian faith. For others, that might still be a little bit far away, and I really do want to encourage you to carry on and to look at that transformation. For others, it might be something you're still considering, and I hope that what I have to say today is useful in your journey as well. One of the books that I first received when I was a Christian was by the former Bishop of Durham, and he's a New Testament scholar, a big theologian, he's called Tom Wright. And the first book I got was called The Case for the Psalms. So I had a quick look back at this book this week to see what I, as a 16-year-old, was reading. And there's a really important point here, and it really touches on what Stuart was saying there. Let me just read this out to you. Paul speaks at one point of Christians as God's poem, God's artwork, where his workmanship, say some of the translations of Ephesians 2:10. The Greek word that Paul uses there is poema, the very word from which the English word poem is derived. God gives us these poems, the Psalms, that we're going to look at today, as a gift, in order that through our praying and singing of them, he may give us as a gift to the world. And then there's really, really impactful point. We're called to be living, breathing, praying, singing poems. Okay, so ponder that, your life as a poem, declaring the praises of God as you go through your everyday life. But of course, actually, when I reflect on my own life, thinking of my own sort of practice as a poem, often doesn't feel very poetic, actually. I wasn't very good at Shakespeare at school anyway. But I can think of my own life, and I can think of the journey that I make most days down to London, where I work at a university. And I can think of it more as a life of trudge, actually, getting on that early train, fighting through the crowds, and so on. But one thing that I've actually come to really find useful in my experience as a commuter is a good backpack over here. So I brought my backpack along with me today. We go through life, don't we, with carrying many different things, okay? Many actual bits and bobs, be it the backpacks or the handbags that you carry. We've got a big backpack full of nappies and toys and clothes and food and all these kind of other things that we have to transport around with Lydia. My book is my office. Sorry, my bag is my office in many ways. It's got laptops, it's got charging cables, it's got books, notes, you name it. I meet people all across London, so I'm kind of really traveling as I go. And I just want to show you a few sort of behind the curtain things in here. So just the commuter experience. Good set of deodorant. It's quite important. So those of you who encountered me in home group on the hottest day of the year will know what I look like cycling back. And increasingly, I'm also discovering these little gifts from my daughter, Pegs, that she takes out of our back room and puts in my bag to remind me of her. So I think that's a kind of, yeah, she's doing a bit to kind of remind me of her on my everyday. So I've got everything I need in there, and I take it everywhere with me. I really, you know, if I take things out of it at any point, I feel lost. But one place I would never think about taking it would be to bed, actually. Sounds strange, doesn't it? But actually, many of us, I think, carry certain spiritual or even emotional things with us throughout the day. Not the books and materials of a commuter, but the weighty things, the conversations that we may have had, the disappointments that we carry through the day. All of those things come home with me, so I can take that backpack off when I come through the door, but I still carry on with those weighty issues. I often can't go to sleep because I'm struggling with these things, processing them. I wish I could just put them in the backpack and leave them at the door, but in reality, I take those things with me. When I was a research student, I went to South Africa for just over a year, and I lived and worked in the fastest and largest growing slum in sub-Saharan Africa, a place called Khayelitsha in Cape Town. And through that process, I was meeting people all through the day with horrendous poverty, health issues, experienced huge amounts of violence. And when I would go home to my comfortable kind of suburban enclave, I had left the place, I'd taken my backpack off, left my notebook behind me, but I still had this weight on my chest of all the worries and concerns that I'd encountered. I wonder if you have ever had a season like that, in which you struggle to almost switch off. Well, 16% of adults in the UK have been diagnosed as sleep deprived. Okay, the pressures of work, exams, sports, young children, okay? I also deal with a whole variety of students in my working relationship who are dealing with things like mental health problems and concerns that they have around their own well-being. That work doesn't stay at work anymore. It comes home with me. Not helped by having our email and things on our phones. We have also that stress about finances, relationships. All of those things can be weighing on us that we can't simply just take off. They come with us. So today what I want to do and focus in on is a small and unique psalm that's tucked away at the beginning of that book, Psalm 4. I've been speaking to many of you and saying I'm going to be reading Psalm 4, and you're like, okay, I don't really know much about that one. So I want to actually spend a bit of time just looking at it today. Importantly for us, it's an evening prayer. An evening prayer. So something that was said at the end of the day. Something that moved David, as we'll see, from restlessness and trouble into a situation of peace. And I think there's something there for us to look at. So let's just read Psalm 4. If you've got your Bibles in front of you, that'd be great if you could flip to them. If you've got your tablets or phones, feel free to do so too. So Psalm 4. For the director of music, with stringed instruments, a psalm of David. Answer me when I call to you, my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. How long will you people turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart his faithful servant for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Tremble and do not sin. When you're on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. Offer the sacrifices of the righteous and trust in the Lord. Many, Lord, are asking, who will bring us prosperity? Let the light of your face shine on us. Fill my heart with joy when their grain and new wine abound. In peace I will lie down and sleep. For you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. That's a wonderful reflection, really short, succinct psalm of this evening prayer that David is saying and singing. So let's just focus in on a few of the key sections as we go through. First one, answer me when I call to you, my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. It's quite clear when you're reading through this that King David is going through a particularly challenging situation, although we actually don't really know what or when it was. So scholars kind of disagree, but it's very clear that the people of Israel at this time are sort of in trouble or are kind of clamoring for him to do something, to change their situation in some way. And that's causing him a huge amount of stress. And in this situation, he cries out in distress in this evening. First, we can look and see a lot about David's relationship with God. And I think they're really useful for us to look at and remind ourselves too. There is a closeness here, isn't there? I think. Look at the language behind me. It almost feels quite disrespectful, actually, approaching God in this kind of very personal, close way. You know, making these demands. Answer me when I call to you. That seems something which is built on a real closeness. I also like this phrase. I love this phrase, righteous God. It's an honorific, so a term of honor that's rooted in how God relates to his people. He does right by his children. He's a righteous father and a righteous God. And it's interesting that in this restless place, David goes with confidence towards God, who he knows as his savior. And when things go on in our lives, when we're in those restless kind of places, do we draw close and look to God, knowing he will do right by us? That's true of who he is, and I think we can really call upon that when we're going through different situations. But when it's faced with confidence or panic, when the situation arises, I know from my own personal life that I tend to panic, actually. At least initially, I would panic. I'm a fixer. I strategize quite a lot. I think I can solve all these difficult situations in my own life, in my own way. How can I get the outcome that's best for me? How can I, if I'm honest with myself, manipulate the situation a little bit so that the desired outcome is what I want? I will get furthered, or my voice will be heard a bit more. And as I've gotten older and a bit more experienced in my Christian walk, when I think I've got something controlled, I've actually learned really that that thing has got control of me in many ways. When I think I've got all this amazing situation at work sorted, I know actually that I'm secretly just checking my emails all the time at home just to make sure that nothing's changed, that I can respond really quickly to something if it crops up, to get my voice heard and my experience heard. Panic and a lack of confidence might be natural in situations of trouble and uncertainty, but they're not helpful, I don't think. Prayer, on the other hand, as we see epitomized in David, is a really powerful tool, I think, in reminding us to put our confidence in God and God alone. I have got a personal tendency to try and do and get things. Okay, that's where that panic comes from, do and get things. But prayer, as we know, isn't about doing and getting. It's actually more about being and becoming. Okay, asking God to help us to be a better person, or asking us to become a situation to resolve itself. Let me say a little bit more about that. Machines and technology that we all increasingly are using in our homes are very good at doing and getting things. I can log on to Spotify, Netflix, iPlayer, and I can encounter a whole variety of different types of media and entertainment. My house can, I was looking at an advert the other day, you actually get a live doorbell that actually sort of takes pictures of people when they ring your door. It allows you to do things a bit more efficiently. Okay, I can answer the door from Spain or whatever. They run our homes, they give us huge amounts of choice, but they can't lift that heaviness from our souls that we experience. They can't make us be or become a better person. No machine or technology can do that and take that weight off, but prayer really can. Prayer opens us up to God, as we see David doing here, and allows him to do work on us, on our souls, our bodies, our minds. And when I'm stressed, the last thing I want to do is to carry more, to add additional things to my spiritual or emotional backpack. I need someone to carry what I cannot. I can take a backpack off, I can rearrange it, I can take things out. But how do we do that for our souls? Prayer, I think. Prayer opens us up. The things we carry and pick up and invites God to carry those weighty things that we can't do. And before I move on to the rest of the psalm, I just as an aside, I really love how David prays here, actually, just as a model for our own prayer life. It's raw and it's in process, I think. I used to think that you had to pray in the right way with a kind of really low voice and kind of respectful tone. But actually, God wants sincerity and honesty, doesn't he? Okay? What is the point in making our prayer life look good for God? He can see it in all of our messiness. And if we're being honest with God, we are being honest with ourselves, if we're honest with him. Something that I know as a man, actually, often I'm kind of feel a little bit of pressure sometimes to sort of man up, and actually kind of make sure things that I approach God in a particular way, I've got it sorted, really. But actually, we need to be raw and honest, and that's something that we need to try and practice, I think, here and in our own lives as well. So David opens up about what's going on inside. So let's see what is actually happening in this situation. Verse 2, how long will your people turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart his faithful servant for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Tremble and do not sin. When you're on your bed, search your hearts and be silent. Offer the sacrifices of the righteous and trust in the Lord. So David is clearly frustrated here, and there are people who are being really critical of him, actually, questioning his decisions and his trust in God, ultimately. And we don't know the specifics, as I said. It's challenging, actually, that in the first verse, he's actually addressing God in a form of prayer, whereas here, he's now really talking to people. So what is going on here? Well, I want to suggest, as I've just been introducing, actually, that David is navigating that issue of the spiritual and emotional backpack as he comes to the evening time. He's laying down at night and almost running through those conversations and those issues which are occurring in his day. Looking at the ceiling, working things through, can't close his eyes, but contemplating what he should do. And we've experienced this ourselves, I'm sure. We invite God into those conversations to give perspective in ways that we can't do. Instead of thinking about how I can strategize my way out of a problem, I know that the Lord hears me when I call to him. And what's remarkable, of course, is how he works through these different criticisms. Let's look again onto verse 2. What I find interesting is that the circumstances clearly haven't changed from that first verse. It's a prayer, Lord, help me out in this situation. But then you see in the second and third verses, actually, that relief hasn't come yet. But what we do see is that he's confident in God, regardless of those circumstances. Know that the Lord has set apart his faithful servants for himself. He's saying that almost to himself as an encouragement, as a reminder that in these difficult situations, he can trust in God. And he actually counsels the people to turn back to God in the next few verses, in 4 and 5. Notice all the different commands and imperatives here. Tremble, do not sin, search your hearts, offer the sacrifices, trust in the Lord. So in the midst of this pain, this difficult situation he's encountering, as he's processing some of the criticisms in this evening psalm, he's actually got a growing confidence in God. He's encouraging them to turn back in the way that he knows God will answer. Note that the worry and concern now given over to stating the truth and about trusting God. You know, David knows this from his situations when he was a young child, when the situation when he fought Goliath, as well as his ongoing period as king and as someone ascending to the throne as well, and those tussles with Saul. He knows that he can trust God. And as Christ followers, we know that there's nothing easier about your life as a result of trusting in Jesus. Our lives still have ups and downs, and we still attract criticisms and doubters. There is no fast pass or queue jump through suffering, pain, and anxiety. But what is different is that we know that we're not alone, and that we have a God who hears our prayers. Just a few verses just to remind you of those from elsewhere in the Bible. Proverbs 15:29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayers of the righteous. 1 Peter 3:12, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer. And in 1 Peter 5:7, cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. And that final one is one that I think a lot about, and I'm sure many of you do. It's a wonderful encouragement and something to really hold on to when we are going through difficult times. It's not just that God hears our prayer and cares for us, but that he can also carry things, particularly those things that would break me if I was doing them on my own. I can trust him with those burdensome things. And I can think of one situation fairly recently at work when I've had to have a difficult conversation with my boss, actually. You ever had one of those? Having to kind of, as someone who's kind of young and inexperienced, having to go to your boss and actually say, I disagree with the situation. I disagree with the decision that you've made. I feel it's, you know, I just can't do it. I can't follow through with it. I really stressed out about it, actually, having the temerity, if you like, to actually stand up to my boss and say, I disagree with you on this situation. And I was praying about it as I was going into that situation. But again, those prayers were about getting and doing, getting the best outcome, doing the right thing, but in my own way. And one of my friends, my friend called Ben, we share each other's lives and we kind of meet up on a regular basis and pray and just text each other, asking for prayer and support. And he had this different perspective, actually. He said, you know, are you trusting God with that conversation? Are you trusting God with that conversation? Or are you still just actually praying about what you can do and how you can get it? And I took a bit of a double take, to be honest, because I thought, actually, I'm kind of really good at sort of getting my way, doing things. But again, I was praying about those things that I want to do. And this is what I think the outcome should be, Lord. Make it happen. Okay, that probably sounds quite familiar to some of you. Instead of, you know, God, I want to be the right person in this relationship. I want to be the right person in this conversation. And regardless of how it goes, I trust you to work it out. Those prayers, again, were more about doing and getting originally rather than being and becoming. So instead, actually, Lord, would you help me carry this? I don't know how to give this to you, but I do. I gave him the fear and the worries and the anxieties that I had, the different scenarios that I've been thinking about and strategizing in my mind about things I would say and ways I would actually kind of skirt around the issue or sugarcoat it a little bit. And importantly, gave him control of the outcome. And when I gave those things, I received real relief and peace. I was so nervous about going to the meeting, and that was still there, but I could be confident that he would be God in and through it and actually wanted the best things for us. And I could trust him with it, and I experienced real peace. And David had confidence regardless of the circumstances, and we can too. Let's see how he goes back to God in the next few verses, in verse 6 and 7. Many, Lord, are asking, who will bring us prosperity? Let the light of your face shine on us. Fill my heart with joy when their grain and new wine abound. These are David's followers again, who want hard circumstances to change. The people of Israel, you know, throughout the Bible are moaners, really, aren't they? Okay, not manner again. But as king, I think I would actually have been really tempted to try and shoulder that appeal, to actually try and do something again, to say that it's my responsibility as the leader to try and work through some particular plan or solution. Again, I would be adding something to put in my backpack. But of course, the great thing about David here is that he points to God rather than himself. Let the light of your face shine on us. So David couldn't change it, though he might try this situation with all the doubt and concern being aired. But he knew that God could. And in doing so, he experienced greater joy. Just quickly on joy, it's something that's very different to happiness. And we were just hearing a little bit, Stuart there when he's praying, was talking about joy. We often get joy and happiness a bit confused, I think. But they are different. Happiness is a fleeting thing. Okay, as any of you who've had a small child running around will know. Okay, they can be happy one moment and then they'll be in tears the next. But joy endures because it's deep and rich. Okay, it's deep and rich, built on big reservoirs. We can have joy in any circumstance and pain because it's centered around confidence in God and drawing upon those deep wells. When we're confident in God, we experience joy and peace. That final verse, what a wonderful verse it is. In peace I will lie down and sleep, for you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. The Lord alone can give us peace in our life. I'm talking about myself here. I realize I'm just airing through my own thoughts and experiences. But again, I think I can carry things so much. The truth is that I can't, and I shouldn't really, actually. I shouldn't. As I've learned in South Africa and elsewhere, and more recently as a parent, I can't do everything myself. I can only my physical reserves are only so strong. We make our relationship with God very complex sometimes, I think, when it's very simple. He alone can give us peace. He alone can give us rest. So rather than strategize out of our needs or hang on to our pains, we really need to trust him with it. And it's very easy to say that, isn't it? But I want to just finish by just thinking about what we can do next and how we can maybe take some of the lessons from David forward. So can I make two suggestions? Firstly, it's an evening prayer. So it'd be wonderful, I think, if you're thinking through these issues, before you go to bed tonight, actually read this out again in the quiet of your own heart. Think about it in bed like David did. And let these words be the last things that go through your mind before you go to sleep and draw peace from them. And also, secondly, I think I know that I can really carry past hurts and guilts around with me. Okay, it takes me a long time to take things out of my spiritual backpack, if you like. But I do know I want to get rid of them. I want support and help. And the best thing about being a Christ follower, as I said, is that God can carry these things that we can't and can help us as we try and shoulder these difficulties. So I want to encourage you to try and do that, to write down any of those past hurts or things that you feel that you're carrying and share them with someone who's close to you and pray. I'm sure Stuart or home group leaders will be happy to have that conversation with you. We aren't supposed to carry these things on our own. God carries them with us. And this psalm calls us to be confident in God, regardless of our circumstances, and he alone can give us the peace that we need. Finally, I started with a book that was very foundational in my life 16 years ago, and I actually want to finish on something that I read fairly recently, actually. And it's not from an Anglican theologian this time. It's actually from a Catholic theologian. Okay, I know we're all part of the same family in Christ, but this is from a Dutch theologian called Henry Noven, who many of you might know. He writes on the spiritual life in particular, and I was reading this book of his time in a monastery in upstate New York. It's called the Genesee Diary, and it's a time when he went away being very busy and actually looked for refreshment and spiritual charge. And it's a little bit long, but I'll read this out. This is him writing on his time in this kind of retreat. Slowly these words enter into the center of my heart. They are more than ideas, images, comparisons. This is him reading the Bible. They become a real presence. After a day with much work or with many tensions, you feel that you can let go in safety and realize how good it is to dwell in the shelter of the Most High. Many times I've thought, if I'm ever sent to prison, if I'm ever subjected to hunger, pain, torture, or humiliation, I hope and pray that they will let me keep the Psalms. The Psalms will keep my spirit alive. The Psalms will allow me to comfort others. The Psalms will prove the most powerful, yes, the most revolutionary weapons against the oppressor and torturer. How happy are those who no longer need books, but carry the Psalms in their heart, wherever they are and wherever they go. Maybe I should start learning the Psalms by heart so that nobody can take them away from me. Just to be able to say ever and ever again, and here he's quoting from Psalm 4, O men, how long will your hearts be closed? Will you love what is futile and false? It's the Lord who grants favors to those whom he loves. The Lord hears me whenever I call him. And then he says, this is a prayer that really can heal many wounds. So I think that's a wonderful just place to think and draw near and draw close again. Just thinking about how someone else, coming back to our theme of Desert Island Psalms, actually uses those psalms as a place of comfort in difficult times. And actually wants to really kind of engage with them on a regular basis, a deep basis, just like you'd have to do on a desert island, I guess. So let's just close in prayer, and I'll hand back to Stuart.